every year in Italy there is an exhibition show about public administration and new media and ICT. And now we speak about radio and television for public administration. The radio is a very simple media because it's not expensive, also because the radio like to read a book to exit the imagination. And also, when you listen to radio, you can make another occupation. We think that the radio have a new era of Rinascimento with the internet. What is the future of the radio?
That will be always the big winning card for radio, the possibility of being heard and not requiring other levels of attention. Radio plays, and the reason it's rising again, radio plays a unique, irreplaceable role in the economy of attention, which is the economy of the present, and will probably stay the economy of the future as well. The true value today is to what extent can you grab attention from your fellow citizens or your fellow men. To what extent, even for a musical, for a musical piece on the radio, to what extent you must choose that musical piece so that it'll maintain the attention or the interest of the listener. This is part of the, you know, editorial teamwork to discover how to grab attention, and radio does so very, very well. Is an inexpensive medium. Another big feature of radio: it doesn't cost a lot. Its broadcasting is now becoming facilitated and distributed in more precise and more selective way, thanks to the internet and the possibility of addressing people who actually leave their address. I mean, come on. It's amazing. Radio now has access to a return on its, you know, on its projection, a return, a feedback that it never had before. Yeah, radio's going to do very well. I don't know whether, you know... even advertising will probably follow well on radio, has always done well on radio. And also, radio is capable of many, many, many variations and many different kinds of publics. Radio can achieve a very fine carving of its public. We're talking about this at the University of Federico II in Naples, and we've just finished a course on digital culture, and one of the groups of students presented a very interesting project called Radio Online and Radio, or Radio dell'Ateneo. And they made a show. They actually presented that show. It was really sweet and very nicely done, full of energy and, you know, very exciting. And then the question was, all of us, students and teacher, there were three there, were discussing, like, how does one carve one's public? Radio has to deal now with a very specific public, practically a named public, okay? So how do you grab the attention of that public, and how do you make it, how do you fidelize it, or you make it faithful to you? Well, this is the big demand of every media producer. But it was exciting to know that within a university system, a radio would actually work for university kids who would want to get their own, and they would use it as background. We have a radio at University of Toronto, and it seems to be doing very well. So there's nothing that's going to replace radio.
You have written many books with McLuhan, the creator of a Global Village. Can you tell me about your friendship?
Yeah, yes. Well, let's not exaggerate. I did not write books with McLuhan. I wish I had. Although I couldn't have done such a wonderful job anyway. I was very slow with McLuhan. But I translated his books, and that was slow too. I learned a lot when I was translating. I must say, if you don't understand an author, let's say a philosopher or a sociologist or whatever, if you don't understand, try and translate that person. That's provided you speak two languages. It's something. It's a good counsel. You really learn the thought of somebody by doing that. I did contribute a few knickknacks from cliché to archetype. Actually, I proposed an amusing thing. McLuhan had written this book called From Cliché to Archetype as a dictionary. So each chapter, instead of being logically and causally sequentially organized, were actually just alphabetically. So he admitted it. And so I think he had about 28 or 20, maybe more, I mean 30 chapters. And I thought, now, they're all about cliché, and the book was called Cliché to Archetype. So I said to Marshall, why don't we take the Dictionnaire des idées reçues, the Dictionary of Clichés, really, that was done by Flaubert, Gustave Flaubert, in Bouvard et Pécuchet. It's fantastic. It's a 19th century dictionary of what people considered as common thing, commonplace, cliché, banalities of the time. And McLuhan wanted to do a book about banalities and cliché of his own time. So we put it all together. That was my contribution. And the book actually didn't sell much more in French than it did in English. But it is a great book. It's a lot of fun. And the Dictionnaire des idées reçues of Flaubert does help a great deal. So that was my contribution to co-writing with McLuhan. Now, I've done I did a little book of his papers, which I commented, which was actually published in Italian also. It was From Eye to Ear, Dall'Occhio all'Orecchio. It was in Italian. And so that was rather nice. So I worked with him. Working with him was a very was a fun experience. Not always. He'd wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning, like, you know, middle of the night, and he'd say, Derek, I don't know when he slept, Derek, I've got this new thing that we should add to the book. I said, Marshall, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Yes, well, who cares? And then, but Marshall, the book, this is like, you know, this is the original thing that I'm trying to say. Who cares? So anyway, we would do, and we would work together on different aspects of the book in that way. It was always very, very exciting to get a call from him, even in the middle of the night.
This is all for today. You have listened a short interview with Professor Derek Decker-Cove of McLovin Institute of Toronto, Canada, and Federico II, University of Naples. Bye-bye and greetings from Naples.